This is a form with the title, "One of the Guys, Women in Science, Engineering, and Even Technical Jobs at Holden." We're going to focus particularly tonight on one sector of human activity, that is science and technology, although certainly we could use that opening question to talk about women in lots of fields. Tonight we're going to focus particularly on science and technology. After last night's forum on crime and punishment and prisons, this may seem like kind of a tame topic, sort of mundane. And in a way, it is mundane in the best sense of that word, I think, that it's about work and about how people use their gifts to make a contribution to the world and to the people around them. Our goal is to exchange some ideas about why women do or do not participate in the fields of science and technology, and if they don't or do, if it should be changed and how it might be. We don't expect to reach any consensus or agreement. In fact, we hope that it isn't all consensus and agreement, or what's the point of having a forum, right? We do hope that we'll have some lively conversation. We have three panelists, Jane Rossing, Kirk Salverson, and Heather McDonald. I'm not going to say much about them because that's one of the first things we're going to ask them to do, is to talk about what they do. But each of them will talk about their own experiences and then respond to some questions about how things might change. Then we'll open things up for all of you to talk. We'd like to hear from the audience, of course. These panelists are not here to give you the definitive word, only the first word. We don't expect them to agree, and if you don't agree with them or with each other, you're certainly encouraged to say that. Please don't jump on each other, you know, sort of kindly encourage the conversation to go on, and we will stop promptly at 9:30. Okay. Each of the panelists have been asked to speak for a few minutes about these four questions to begin. What is your field or your job? How many women are in that activity? How did you get interested in it? And who were your mentors? How were you encouraged or discouraged in your entry into your present work? And we'll just work across like that, skipping over me.
I can't even.
Sure. We'll go this way.
Okay. I'm Heather McDonald, and I teach geology at the College of William and Mary in Virginia. And I'll look at the questions while I'm doing this. What I do is teach classes to undergraduates, both geology majors and non-majors, and also do research in the field I'm interested in, a certain part of geology. I got interested in geology when I was at college, and I went there planning to be a math major and quickly changed to physics and started taking physics classes. But two of my friends were geology majors, and they seemed so interested in geology, and it sounded like they had a lot of fun. They got to go on field trips and do other things. So I took a class. And I liked it, so I kept taking more classes. And at some point, I switched from being a physics major to a geology major. And it took a while to make that actual decision, but geology always made so much more sense to me than physics did. And it seemed really logical and really interesting. And the department was very collegial, so it was a lot of fun, basically. Mentors. When I thought about this, I thought of about four people who I could say, or actually five or six, that really encouraged me. And first of all, I think are my parents, who are both in or were in the medical profession and somewhat unconventional, and they always encouraged me to do whatever I wanted to do. Then I remember a math teacher in high school who really, really supported me. I took a math class from him in, I think, 9th or 10th grade. And then he asked me to be his assistant and then do some other things, and also talked about programs that I could get involved in high school. In graduate school, my advisor was really supportive. and that was good. But it wasn't until I was in my first job that I actually met a woman professional in the field of geology, at least one that I knew more than just hearing a name. And when I got to William & Mary, there were two people, one person who was good to me in terms of advising me about the how to work the system, basically, at William & Mary. And it's only been the last 1 or 2 years that I've actually had what I call a mentor in the field of geology. And that's a woman that's a couple, about 5 years older than I am, who teaches at another university, and who's very, very supportive, and more than that, really challenging me to do different things and giving me advice on what to do and what not to do. And that's been really useful. I guess one thing I forgot to say is the percentage of women in my field, which I don't really remember this, but the numbers I recall are that in, if you look at college graduates or college majors, they're about 25% women in geology. If you look at women teaching geology, that number drops to about 13%. So one other thing I just wanted to say is something about the things that were problems or difficulties. And do I have time? Or should
I
stop? 1 minute. Okay, just a real quick run through. I don't know how many times I've heard the words, you got the job because you were a woman. When I've made suggestions at meetings, 2 minutes later, a man will make the same suggestion and get lots of credit for it, where it just went right by me making that suggestion. And I think I'll stop there. I have lots of others, but that will
You'll have more opportunities as we go on.
Kirk?
My name's Kirk Salveson. I'm presently the mechanic here at Holden. I've been here a couple of years and have done a couple of different jobs before landing in this particular position. I have no training in this particular profession. In fact, I've never owned a car in my entire life. And people ask me where I get my experience, and they assume it's from doing your own mechanics, but it's not. I have a degree, an undergraduate degree in Latin American history, and a major also in religion. So I'm a little bit out of my field here. I guess the reason I came to where I am today is because from when I was very little, I had an insatiable curiosity about how things worked, and I've always had to know how things work. Whether it's looking at a building to see how it's built or how it stands, as to how machines work. Things have always fascinated me, and I remember many times getting lost from my parents because I kind of wandered and just was looking at things, whether it be at museums. I remember an experience at I thought the Institute of Science and Industry Museum in Chicago was about one of the most fascinating places I had ever been as an 8 or 9 year old. But wherever I've gone, from when I was very little, I just needed to know how things worked. And so I always ask a lot of questions. And I guess that would be, when I first thought of who my mentors are, there's no one that has really encouraged me to do any of this. My family is terribly unskilled. They believe that electricity is mostly magic. They don't know why water comes out of pipes. They're just thankful that it does. Painting is about the furthest that my family has explored into the technical skills. So I don't have a father or a mother or a grandfather or someone, a mentor in my family that has taught me these things. And the only reason, and quite honestly, I'm quite late to coming to this field. I'm actually getting hands-on experience in mechanical things. And so really for a person my age, I'm not very advanced. I'm quite quite unskilled for a lot of other people who get into this early on. So I have a lot to learn, and Holden's been a great opportunity for me in that it allows me to, you have a lot of time at Holden, and that's what I need, is a lot of time to figure things out. But I guess my mentors would probably be those who were willing to let me tag along with them. And there were some of those people in my life from when I was very young, and I guess those few people that let me tag along would be the people that I would have to say are my mentors. The percentage of women in this particular field, I have never been a mechanic anywhere else but Holden. Before I came, I was driving trucks, and there are a few more women in that field, but I've never met a woman mechanic, quite honestly. I guess I've never even heard of one either. And I don't know if anybody has ever been to one in this room. Has anyone? I mean, it's really not a field that women have broken into. And I guess I can understand why. What should be done, or what can be done at Holden?
That's the next question.
Oh, sorry. That's it?
Yeah.
It's a very interesting question.
Yeah.
We can also come back to that.
Is that appropriate now?
No,
appropriate.
No, that's the next question.
Like, well, it's hanging.
That's right. So, to be continued.
Okay, my field is agricultural engineering, and I have to, in order to tell you how I got interested in that, I have to go a little bit further back. At college, I was a physics major, and I can say very clearly there were two reasons why I went into physics at college. Number one was because I was good at it, and I was absolutely hopeless at, like, literature. I never could understand what, you know, deeper meanings in books and stuff. I was hopeless. So it was easier. It was a lot easier. And the second reason I went into it was because I thought it was useful, and I really wanted to work overseas, even at that time, and it seemed like, you know, you're at a liberal arts college. It's not real clear what you can do overseas, but one thing you can do is teach, and I'd always read that a lot of countries need science teachers. So I thought that would be a good way to do something useful overseas. I'm sorry that I can't say that I went into it because I loved it so much. It's strange that I stuck with it so long, because I didn't particularly love it. As a matter of fact, when I was a senior and I was behind in the physics curriculum, because, you know, you're taking a lot of physics and a lot of math, because I had gone overseas to do things which I liked more on the St. Olaf Far East semester, and studying religion and history and things like that. And then I was hopelessly behind it. Just, I couldn't believe that I had to take all this math and physics my last year, but it was one of my big crises in my life. But somehow I decided that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to teach science overseas. So I stuck with it and did that. For 3 years. And then when I came back, I wanted to do something that met people's needs a little closer than teaching abstract physics and math in a very small village where, you know, I was teaching electricity and magnetism and there wasn't any electricity in the village and things like that. So I wanted to, like, do something more at the level of people's needs. And so I thought engineering, and I didn't have a clue what engineering was. I mean, St. Olaf, of course, doesn't have any, as I'm sure many of you have gone to schools like that. And I started looking at the different engineering fields, and somebody steered me to agricultural engineering. It's a long story, but really I had never heard of it, and a month later I was in a graduate program in it. So it's very low in women. I'd say even of all the engineering fields, agricultural engineering is probably the lowest. We have a few more women civil engineers. I met a bunch of electrical engineers, but really agricultural engineers. At that point, we knew of one woman who had her PhD in ag engineering in the country, and the professors were still very, like, surprised, but they were always supportive, very supportive, of having a woman go into it. So I'm not going to name any mentors because I feel like all my professors all the way along were very supportive of me. They were surprised by having women there, and they were surprised because back in the old days it was mostly farmers that went into ag engineering. And not only was I not an engineer by background, I knew absolutely nothing about agriculture, which made it harder. I don't know what this has to do with it, but I just wanted to, I had this urge to know practical things. I had this vision of being a practical person, and I knew that I was hopeless at it. But like, I signed up for welding class, which we were allowed to audit, and as engineers, we were allowed, you know, you could audit free these welding classes. And that was one of the most humiliating experiences of my life, because I had been in a lot of classes all the way through college of being one of only two women. And I had been in a few college courses of being the only woman. And it was never that terrible, though it's not easy. But in welding, I was the only woman, and I was the worst one by a long shot. I was a really terrible welder. So that really woke me up. I don't know. It was a hard thing to go to, because why don't we know things like that? I took small engine mechanics. I really wanted to learn. I came up to Holden and really asked to be the mechanics assistant, and they were very generous in letting me do that, and it was great. But I wasn't good at it at all. I never had that sense of being able to just sort of figure things out. And that's the questions that I always ask me. Why don't we? You know, Kirk says he's not from a mechanical family. I mean, I certainly never learned it at home, but why aren't women learning the things at home, or at least having that urge to take things apart and figure out how things work more? Okay, now I can take
it. Okay, now, heavy. The question that we turn to now is the one that Kirk said for us, which is, now, why is that? Since you started on it, we'll go to you first this time. When you said, "Well, I guess I can see why there aren't any very many women engineer mechanics."
Well, maybe somebody else would like to try and answer at it. I mean, I've got my own, but
is it child toys? Maybe you think? I don't know the way the boys and girls' toys are separated into different ones, building the other ones dolls. I guess that's what I grew up with. My sister always had dolls, and she had a Barbie doll, so we had the trucks and the little tool kits so we could take apart stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I guess maybe they're just not the right learning atmosphere when we're young. Maybe.
For those of you women who own cars, and what's it like going to a garage? Is it the thing that you look forward to? Not if you can take away the money that you're going to be wrestled out of and all the other aspects of that, but really, as far as being dealt with as a person, I guess.
Well, I feel like I'm speaking a different language. I feel like I'm a foreigner in my own country, and that nothing I say, there's no registration. Nothing I say about what I feel is wrong with my car is being heard and understood. So it's really humiliating. I end up just slinking away with my checkbook.
Even the women I know who go into mechanic knowing exactly what's wrong and telling the mechanic what's wrong are still treated as if they don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. You feel like you're entering a man's world when you go into the garage.
But they're very nice to me. I mean, I don't feel like I've been abused or anything. I just don't feel like I've been understood. They're very patient and nice, but they don't understand me.
You guys feel that at all?
I feel under tremendous pressure that I should understand.
I should know it all.
I mean, I thought you were kind of agreeing about, I wouldn't say necessarily just narrow down to toys, but I know in my family, which was a pretty progressive liberal family, there was still real strong gender socialization between me and my brother and my sisters. And I just remember, especially on the car, which I just hated, and I don't understand cars that well, but there was always an expectation that when something went wrong, I was supposed to figure it out. And I remember all these family trips when my dad would still be working and it would be my mom and the kids going places and something would happen to the car. And I was supposed to do something with it. So all my sisters would be sitting in the car. I'm out there with a hood on, not even knowing what I'm looking at. But there's this expectation that I'm supposed to figure it out. And you know, my sister Martha's, you're gonna be not much thinner that she changed the oil in her car, all this kind of stuff. And, but it was, you know, we, even in a fairly progressive family, grew up with this expectation that boys would know how to do it and girls would wait for the boys to do it.
Mm-hmm. I feel uncomfortable at garages, and not because it's a place where I'm expected to know things that maybe I don't. Because the mechanical aspects of it, I feel capable enough about, but it's the aspect of men together alone that kind of bothers me a little bit. When I worked in a shop, I guess there were things that I would be real uncomfortable just being on the backside of it and seeing it. I would really be uncomfortable as a woman moving into a garage, because I feel uncomfortable as a man thinking about how women have to enter into that world. And it's not a comfortable feeling to me. And I guess I don't know why it happens that way, but I think it's because it's a group of men, and you're never called to accountability probably by men. There is a staff person up here a while ago, and she's had a lot of problems with her car this spring, and she asked me how to become a mechanic. And I said, well, you can take a 2-year course at a community college, and you can then test to become a master mechanic, and you can probably get a job after that. And she thought that that's maybe what she'd do, and then she wanted to start a garage geared for women. Mm-hmm. And she told me that I might be able to get a job with her, but I probably wouldn't be able to work in front.
Well, I think that helps.
I think it's an environment that very few people feel comfortable in, men or women. But men don't feel comfortable for the reasons that Dan said, because we're expected to know things. And I guess my feelings about women would be that I wouldn't feel comfortable just because it is such a man's world, in quotes.
So we're talking about two different aspects of the job. One is the thing that you do, the skills that are involved, and the other one is sort of the social atmosphere around those skills.
Yeah.
Do those things apply to your fields too? Of why there aren't so many women? And Jane said,
yes,
I was good at it.
It's a very strange thing to be one of only one or two women in classes consistently in the lab and whatever. You feel, so that's more of the atmosphere thing. I mean, you feel under a lot of pressure to try and be even better than you are, because you're representing all female humanity. And then, I mean, the point in science and engineering, it's maybe a little different than the mechanics. I mean, the actual doing of the job is something that women, I mean, we're not socialized out of it by our toys or whatever. I mean, anyone can do equations and calculate. What someone brought up when we were discussing
math.
Okay, well, maybe that's it. I shouldn't say that. Maybe
you have a math phobia?
Oh, yeah.
I think Jane and I have humanities phobia.
But it's more white collar. What, more white collar, more, I don't know. I look at mechanics as being your classic TV watching, beer drinking, type of folks that really haven't, the church hasn't really gripped them yet. There isn't a whole lot that, you know, being a vegetarian and working in a shop was a little weird for me. And so just the kind of issues that maybe we deal with at Holden, or the kind of the more liberal issues of society, probably hasn't struck that portion of our society. Not that they're dumb or anything, but that's just, you know, you're looking at folks that are more surviving than they are living, I think. And I think maybe in your fields it's a little bit different. You've got people that enjoy their work and are a little more.
So what he was saying is that math and science isn't that fun a lot of the times. It simply isn't. And guys are more socialized to think economically, think where am I going to get a job, where am I going to earn money to, you know, support the family. Whereas we would more think of service, you know, how can I reach out to people, nurture people, make the world a better place, things like that. And a lot of the times, I hate to say that even as a person in engineering, but I agree, a lot of the times it isn't that much fun and you have to have something pushing you.
See, for me, it always was fun. So, just speaking for me, that's not something that can explain it, but I can see where that would be for other people. One thing that I've thought about is there weren't that many women, and so you don't even think that it could be something you'd want to do. You know, I never had any, like I said before, any geology teachers that were women. I didn't really know any women geologists. I just didn't think about a lot of that. And I think little girls don't think they want to grow up to be scientists at all. But getting back to the mechanical thing, I think that is something that is a role. Like, I've told some of you this before, but at the school I went to, we all had to do senior research projects. In the year that I was there, all the women did sort of library research projects that didn't really involve original research. And the men did original research research projects where they did field work and they used equipment. And we didn't know how to use the equipment. Now, I didn't know how to use any of the equipment. And maybe it was my fault for not asking, but we weren't really taught about it.
Didn't you have like equipment 101?
No.
Where did they learn to use it?
I don't know.
Hanging around the lab. Just try.
I think
that
might be.
My experience here at Holden has been that men know how to operate anything that's ever been built. Just about
in the genes.
Yeah, well, it's in the mind basically. I mean, there isn't a man that's come up to the garage everybody wants to operate machines. It's the classic thing. Everybody, you come in every summer, and there are 20 people that want to operate. So they look at this piece of equipment, and that thing must weigh 15,000 pounds. That must be great to drive. I want to do it, men. Yeah, and they all know how to do it. They think, women haven't done this typically, and so they don't ask. My own experience here at Holden has been that the women that have driven for us and operated equipment are generally much gentler, much better operators. They listen. They listen to me. They listen to the equipment. They ask questions, and they don't assume a lot of knowledge. Where men, they just get on it, and they, you know, it's like a boy on a toy, and they just want to run it, and they don't care what it sounds like. They don't care if it breaks. They don't care because they don't have to fix it, and so I think men just kind of do it. They just grab a piece of equipment and assume, well, if I don't know how to do it, I'll figure it out. Uh-huh. And that's how I got to where I am too. So I shouldn't say that I'm any different than any of these other men, except I did it before I got here.
That is really true, and it just scares us to death. I don't know who made that comment.
That was Ryan Vinnie.
What did you say, Ryan?
He said it's like sex.
That's how men operate often. I think it's easier to relate to a machine than it is to a human being. It takes a lot of work to be intimate with something.
See, I knew we could work sex in.
Well,
can I?
I believe that.
Oh, go
ahead. Jane was saying something.
I can't remember what I was saying. No, but I know. Actually, that's the key thing. We see a machine and we're scared of it. You know, who would know how to? I might break that. That's
uh-huh.
Don't.
But
isn't
I get
that
in trouble?
You,
oh, yeah.
All of us. Yeah, I get in trouble. I might break it. And guys say, "Great." So what if I break it? I don't have to fix it.
Yeah, they just tell you where it's broken.
Where does that? I think that's really key.
Barb.
Well, I was just going to ask as a case study. Okay, Heather is right. I did library research the same year she did, and mine was terrible. Heather's was better.
Mine was terrible too.
Okay, but let's ask Dan, who went to the same department. Now, how did you learn how to use like the X-ray diffraction machine, the rock saw, and all those machines? Who taught you? Did you initiate it?
I initiated. I hung around. I was real interested. I remember I had all those geodes.
Yeah, I know. You were always petting rocks.
I was with rocks the way that Kirk was with machines. I just was so fascinated that I wanted to find different ways to study them, so I just hung around and helped them learn how to do all the machines and myself and did it.
See, I think it's amazing that there would be a course of study that doesn't teach you initially how to operate the machines you use to do the study. I can't understand that at all.
I mean, there were some of the courses, like you would learn how to use a microscope if you took the course that did that. But there are a lot of other machines there that you don't do unless you have a specific project. Mm-hmm. I think what often happens is that in my experience, I think this was changing some in geology.
Well, I think so too.
But oftentimes, what happens is the guys would get an idea of a project in mind, and once they had that project in mind, if it required learning a machine, they learned the machine. Oftentimes, my women friends would get a project in mind, and then they found out it meant learning that machine, and they changed the project. They say, "Oh, I can't learn that, or I can't. That's too intimidating," and so they move into something else. I thought it changed a fair amount by the time I was a senior. There were lots of women doing original research and doing a lot of it.
Oh, I think so too, but I think that it was, I think we were steered into projects.
Mm. Yeah.
That wouldn't require using equipment. Well, and we had like one professor that would not talk to the women students in the department, one out of three.
Yeah, and see, by the time I was a senior, we had two women professors. I think that made a big difference. We had some women mentors.
See, here at Holden, hopefully we have some different examples of, or at least some less intimidating people that are heading areas, and still it's at least in my experience here, very few women come and ask me, I would like to learn how to do this, and if you have time or if you help or observe this, but men do ask. And I don't know why that is. And maybe it's just that, for the most part, we aren't interested in it. I mean, mechanics isn't all that thrilling in a way. And so it's no skin off anybody's nose that you aren't interested in it, but it's mostly men that ask, at least me, how things work.
Mm-hmm. That was my experience here, too. It's my first summer, or first fall here. I went up to the garage and said, I want to be the assistant mechanic. And mm-hmm. I was for the fall, and then the next several summers, I ended up working as a mechanic in a marina, and working as a carpenter after that, and so I built up a set of practical skills.
So that we keep coming back to these questions about not just can you do this thing, but how do you learn and how are you motivated to learn? Because we keep hearing that men say, well, I want to learn this, and then they learn. But apparently, if women want to, they don't say it, or else they don't want to. Is that? I mean, well, is a bunch of women sitting here? Do we just not want to know? And
well, I was going to say, I think it's more complex than that at Holden. Kirk and I have talked a bunch about this, and don't necessarily agree. But I think, okay, talking Holden, for example. I mean, I can talk about our geology department too, but. Let's hold on. I think there's more going on in terms of sort of the socialization stuff that Dan talks about, that when a piece of equipment or something goes wrong here at Holden, the guys tend to sort of gather around the pit where it has fallen, or the broken thing, and it's like they belong there. But you feel really uncomfortable. I have felt very uncomfortable as a woman trying to sort of go into a situation like that and hang around to sort of, you know, be like Dan, hanging around the geology lab or something. You don't feel welcome or comfortable. I think, Kirk, you are really right. The guys here are incredibly more sensitive on this than they are most other places. I mean, but still, there's another hurdle that we have to overcome that's much more invisible that has to do with it's not a club, it's something sort of almost unspoken, that it's like men belong and women don't. And I remember one year when we were going to try to have more hydro operators because Skip was overworked. And so I think there were four or five of us who were trained in to be hydro operators. and we went through a training program. I was one of them, and there was one other woman.
Two others.
Okay, but somehow none of the women ever got put onto the schedule. And you know, yeah, sure, we were...
Barb. Sandy Clark made it. She was...
Okay, but she was already trained out. Okay, Sandy was different, but it was when you started, like, dipping into the program area to actually get some program people out of the hydro, you know, and then it was, But anyway, there were men and women program people then who were invited onto the hydro schedule, or things like assistant fire chief and stuff like that, and invited to train for it, and then somehow it never got implemented for the women, but it did for the men. And I would say Fire Chief at Holden is another example of that. I mean, that somehow program types or people with few skills to begin with, there's an invisible barrier that is broken with men here at Holden, but doesn't happen with women. And I think then if we want Holden, and this is the question we haven't gotten to yet, do we want Holden to be a place that tries to overcome some of what we're talking about or not? If we do want it to happen, it's not going to just sort of happen on its own. Women are not going to ask to learn jobs. I did ask to learn hydro, but I have to say I didn't, you know, push for it enough. We're going to have to, like, be deliberate about trying to break down these invisible barriers that we don't even know exactly what they are, and I think take steps. We've talked about, I mean, the proposals even like, all right, if Holden's going to consistently say we can't find a woman electrician, we can't find a woman electrician, we can't find a woman carpenter, we can't find a woman this, that, or the other thing, how about finding someone who has skills but needs training and sending that person to vocational school to learn a job if they'll come and make a commitment to come back? I mean, I think we're going to have to do things like that, and that women are going to have to be really invited into those alternative fields, even at the cost of efficiency to begin with, as we do a lot of other inefficient things around here, because we believe in the principles of them, and if we want to change things. I think there's invisible forces there. Okay, that was really long, sorry.
Dan, do you want to talk?
No.
Oh. I do.
Good. Okay.
Well, there's another problem with women in the sciences, well, more prestigious scientific jobs, which is that if you are a woman in a scientific job that's and you're a minority, very small minority, in one sense it's better for you to be that, because as soon as more women come into the field at a certain point, at a certain percentage, then men start to abandon the field, it starts to lose its prestige, and then the salaries go down. How do you deal with that?
Is there an example of that?
The pastors, ministry. The ministry is the big example right now, but it's not science.
Secretaries.
In the, secretarial work used to be considered skilled men's work. Well, in the Soviet
Women's
Union...
Women's fingers weren't strong enough to hit the typewriter.
It's often cited that most of the doctors mm-hmm. are women, as an example of how women are, you know, an equal part of society, except what often isn't said is that the status of doctors, your average doctor in the Soviet Union, is about equal to the status of nurses in the United States. And it's only the very specialized, the specialists in medicine in the Soviet Union who have high prestige, and they are almost exclusively male.
I was just going to pose a question, which is, instead of, I mean, before we talk about how could Holden and other places change it, does it matter?
That's my question.
Because maybe it doesn't matter if women aren't interested in being the electricians. Is that a problem?
Well, I don't know. You know, I was listening to Barb, and I wish I could fire up enough passion to really get behind that, but I just don't really, I'm just not feeling that it's that big an issue. Now, maybe I suppose I probably should, but it seems like we've established that there are people of both genders who are either mechanical or not mechanical. There are your humanities types and your mechanical types in both. So I know I've never cared how anything works. I'm like the rest of your family, Kirk, who water comes out of the spigot, that's all I care about. And yet, when I was at Holden, I had a very, very freeing and expanding experience of working in at a lot of different kinds of operational jobs. I felt that I'd really maxed what I wanted to do in that area. I drove a truck, and I did a lot of things that I'd never dreamed I could do 16 years ago when I was here the first time. And I have yet to be, I just don't know yet if I need to send somebody to carpentry school for 2 years. I'm not sure that that's, I don't know. I want to try to get to where you are, Barb, but I'm just not convinced.
Well, I think it's another issue, though. And I think there was a person on staff this week. Were you done?
Yeah, I'll be rambling.
A guy who actually became concerned about the kids in the school, and that the grade school kids were not seeing that carpentry or mechanics or plumbing were even options to them as girls in school. Mm-hmm. And the kids were just making conversation about what they wanted to be. And it became real clear that they'd been influenced by kind of mm-hmm. what they saw here. And, you know, I, like you, had a wonderful opportunity and feel really good about being able to be sort of, quote, operational for 6 months. And I'd love to talk more about that. But the sad thing is I would like to have maybe grown up believing all along that I could mm-hmm. do those things, just in terms of my own self-confidence, my own self-worth, my own ability to believe that I could, whereas we had to, I mean, it's sort of like coming later, you know, I had to come and find out at age 33 or whatever that I could, you know, do some of those things. And it was wonderful. I'm not sure that I, you know, I don't really care how things work a whole lot, but, you know, there is something to be gained from believing you can.
But Jackie, did you find when you're an operational staff here that it was like Heather talked about, if you made a suggestion, it wasn't listened to? But if a man made a suggestion, it was. That was my experience when I was an operational staff.
I still find that here. I mean, men often get credit for suggestions.
Yeah.
But I also found men really trying hard. I mean, I think it's a unique setting that way. But I found like Kirk, and it was actually two other operational people that pointed out to me in the time that I was in that job that, you know, that it was really clear that, you know, the boys like to get on the toys. And they said they'd never seen a head maverick who just didn't always want to take the vehicle and go roar into something, you know. And I didn't really care to do that. And the jobs got done. I mean, I wouldn't want to hear what probably was said about things that didn't get done, but it was clear that I did not have the desire to hop on the toys like the people that had come before me. So, but that may not just be gender related, I don't know.
It's not.
I will say from my experience too that I had everything I wanted to do that I expressed a desire to try, mm-hmm. I was given. But now, granted, that's pretty limited given my disinterest. Things I wanted to try to do, I was always given the opportunity to go ahead and try to do. And although there were some, pretty often, three or four guys sitting around telling me how to do it, different advice coming from all directions, but still. The other thing I was grateful for was when there was something I didn't want to do, and there was an occasion 2 years ago when we were putting those nailing down the roofs, and people were climbing with all kinds of ropes and mechanical screwdrivers up to the top of the hotel. And I went up there just to see what it would be like and tried it, you know. But I came down and said, I really don't care to do this. It seems dangerous to me, and this is. And I don't know if a guy would feel comfortable saying, I don't think I want to do this job. Assign me to something, you know, down on the surface of the earth. But I was
okay, well, I just want to say my experience, my experience wasn't the same as yours. I wanted to be a hydro operator, and it didn't happen. So it sounds like your experience is the way you, I mean, but for me, it wasn't.
Really want, how bad did yes. you want to be a hydro
well, operator? Somewhat. I mean, ambivalent, but there was another program person in a very similar situation to mine who who was put on the schedule and who did become an assistant fire chief. And I believe that stuff is gender related. Now, on the question of what does it matter, Jane, I think you really think it does matter.
Yeah, there I was going to answer it. I just was asking the question to ask, but no. Now I'm waiting.
Oh, all right.
To
there aren't enough engineers in the okay. world. You believe that. Furthermore, yes, it really matters at Holden. And here's why, in my opinion. If we're going to try to strive for balance of power at Holden Village, that's a somewhat limited commodity. I mean, and so, and there are a certain number of positions that are administrative or powerful or whatever. All right, if every, and some of them are in operations and some are in program. If every single operations position that of responsibility is going to be filled by a man, that means that if we want equality of power, then every single program position is going to have to be filled by a woman, director, business, I mean, everything like that. And I don't think that's fair. I think men should be able to be in program spots, and if, but not at the expense of, say, 75% of the then administrative staff at Holden being male. I think we've got to move women into operations jobs so that there will be more equality and so that you don't have to just slot all women into all program positions here. I think that would not be fair to men, and I think it's far too limiting on the number of women. The only other option is what we have now, where the majority of administrator or executive staff or whatever you call them, cabinets or stipended people are men. And I want to see Holden move beyond that to more of an equality. But the only way to do that, unless we want to just reserve all program positions for women, is to get women into operations positions.
I've noticed some, oh, go ahead.
Okay, no, I'm sorry if it seemed like I was saying it in a way that it doesn't matter. Oh, I'm sorry. Because I just thought, before we talk about how can at Holden we encourage women, I just thought it was appropriate to see if we were in agreement whether it made a difference. I certainly think it does.
And also I think that I'm hearing two different ways that it might matter at Holden. And one is what Barb just said about power positions and people in visible authority. And the other has to do with what Jackie and Anne were talking about, which is giving women an opportunity to learn something that they didn't know before and to gain skills, which is probably the same thing as having men work in the kitchen if they haven't had that opportunity before, or you know, whatever it is. That one of the things that has impressed me at Holden is that people who come to volunteer don't necessarily have to know what they're going to do, know how to do what they're going to do before they do it. But that's a different kind of goal than what Barb is talking about.
Can I just answer? I mean, I can't talk much about Holden, but I can only talk about the rest of the world, sort of, and that is that.
That's also relevant.
Okay.
The rest of the entire world.
Okay. Sorry about that.
We'll just have to go with
okay,
that.
And that's all right. Like, I'm talking about paid positions, because what I think is really important, your argument I had never thought of before.
No, wait, I have to clarify for just one mm-hmm. second. I am not arguing for few women in the sciences. I think that's very clear. I'm just pointing out that women don't get taken seriously, mm-hmm. even if they are the
once
majority.
Okay, it's very interesting. What I would argue is, right now, science and engineering has power in the world. And it's terrible to talk that way about power, but I just, after these 5 years of watching women struggle so much in Senegal, what I really think we need to work towards is having some money. You have a lot more choices when you have some economic choices. I mean, single women that are supporting all their, you know, children and stuff. I mean, a lot of the problems that women have is poverty. And, you know, decision-making in the world, many people think that scientists don't have enough power, but I think that they have some, a lot of, and there's certainly money. So it matters a lot that women go into sciences and engineering adequately.
Excuse me, Jane, mm-hmm. Hasn't it also been true in agricultural projects in the past that have gone in and tried to, the Green Revolution and so forth, those have always been directed toward men, even in countries in which traditionally the women were in charge of agriculture. Mm-hmm. So that the people who get the new technology are men.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that reminds me of something that Heather told me to to bring up. I mean, in my particular job in Senegal, it was very useful that I was a woman, because working with women, a man couldn't, I don't think, have done exactly the same. So it's another reason that it's very important that women go into fields in order to work with women. I mean, there are some jobs that women could do better than men in technological fields.
Is this the opposite of the American garage? That there's a social structure that encourages that women are responsible for these things, so you need a woman to do that job, just like I always make Rick take my car to the garage, because at least he can talk to them.
You're saying agriculture in
Senegal, what you're saying,
is that the opposite of that?
Yeah.
Well, I have to think about that one. Anyway, women are stuck with that, no matter what they're stuck with.
We have about
no choices.
4 minutes, so if people have been holding comments, now is the time to get them out.
Well, Heather, you haven't said yet what you think could be done to.
Yeah, that's what I thought we really want to talk about, is what you do to change that. And there's not much time, but I think as individuals, there are things that we can do, and things that I do, go talk to elementary school classes, and I think that's really important for the little girls and the little boys, because I think a lot of the prejudice that people have about science starts very early, and it's very deep-seated, and it's subconscious in many levels. And in terms of like the mechanic stuff, I'm not mechanical at all. I show all my students how to work the rock saw, and I make each one of them do it, instead of just saying, will someone want to do this, who is usually a guy, and he learns how to do it, and everybody else watches and goes, oh yeah, I could work that. And then they don't, because I know I can't even learn how to turn a computer on unless I'm the one that turns the button when somebody shows me. So I think really physically getting people to do things. But I also think as institutions, we need to have the institutions make a really strong commitment to having women in academics, women in as professors at Hulu, and making a very strong commitment to having women in sort of equal positions of power. And that's where it gets interesting, is how you do that.
I'd just like to say we have a terrible situation at my seminary, the Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago. There's about 30 faculty positions, the year I arrived last year, there were none. There were two women there the year before, and they were both took jobs at the national headquarters. There were no women. And there's an attitude in the faculty that to get women, that they want to get women, faculty people, but there's like this understood thing that you'd be lowering your standards, your academic standards, when you hire women, which is just maddening, you know? And the same way with blacks. There is an economic problem with that women theologians and black theologians right now are a hot commodity and demand a higher salary. So there's all kinds of pressures, but
there are some parallels into other fields, definitely. Mm-hmm. Anne?
I've just been thinking, other than listening, that this argument about role modeling for children is a really one that strikes me very, very strongly. And I think, I guess these concepts of power are things I haven't thought enough about. And this is helpful because it raises issues. I'm not very comfortable talking about power. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably why I usually avoid it. But I have experienced some of the little syndromes that manifest themselves and then kind of suggest the bigger issues that Barb raises. And I guess that's what I'm saying in addition is that maybe there's a correlation between being female and being uncomfortable with power. And I don't know, I haven't got all the answers about that either.
And not wanting to get on the machine.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, the youth weekend, Jackie, when you drove the bus and took us down, I think it's real important at all levels that's shown. I don't know if you recall, but we happened to be on the bus with all those youth, then you got on as the driver. I mean, you could just hear the moans. I mean, it was like, this little woman can't drive. I remember that because then there was some sort of, we stopped or something because you had to change something. And I remember two of these teenage boys saying something really rude. I don't know if you heard it or not, but it was rude in the sense that it was, you know, God, we should have gone on the other bus or something. And it really stuck with me because our whole weekend we were trying to get through to that.
Yeah, you guys did a lot on that.
That sense. And we talked about it down below a little bit later. Because here was a skilled driver. I mean, I'll bet the kid couldn't have driven the darn thing without running us off the road. But it was the imaging. You know, you just weren't part of the image that was yet acceptable.
It starts with parents, doesn't it?
The one place I've seen it, interesting enough, I go to Minute Loop. I don't know if you go to those fast oil change places.
No.
But the one place where they're breaking buses in, where there's women and minorities, are those jobs. Of course, they're menial. You know, you could look at it as low tech mechanics, but in some sense, I really find it interesting in Parkland, which is heavy military. Everything is male dominated. Mm-hmm. And here at the Minute Loop at Spanaway and Pacific is this one woman. and she play, I think she has to play the role in a different, she never smiles. And when I talk to her, when I try to communicate with her, she's just leave. She's like those mechanics that we've learned to, you know, not get too involved in. And so I hope that will change. But to see her there is really encouraging. That she's able to take that, you know, that thing that has only been meant for, you know, the boys or the men.
Dan has been trying to get in, and then we'll just continue the conversation outside of this room.
I just want to put in a sort of a plug for several things in Barb's and Heather's both. I think that I'm really a firm believer in the need for active advocacy, and it has to take place, I think, in a lot of different senses. We have to model new behaviors, but it's not enough just to model them. There also has to be proactive recruitment and being willing to invest in leading to new behaviors, and also willingness to talk those things through. And I guess the stuff about children stuff always comes home to me in a funny way from my own experience. I grew up in a family with both my parents being doctors. One of my strongest memories of going to first grade was everybody going around the room and being asked what our fathers did. And so we came to me, I said, my father's a doctor. And I said, and my mother's a doctor. And the teacher corrected me and said, you mean your mother's a nurse. And it was a good example, and it stuck with me. I had that thing, that happened to me all through grade school. But what it made me was modeling the new behavior wasn't enough. I had a good model in front of me, my mom being in a non-traditional role. But all of the socialization pressures contradicted that. You know, I was told she couldn't be a doctor. She had to be a nurse. And so I think that, you know, it's got to involve modeling the behavior. It's got to involve talking it through so the children don't just see it, but also talk about it. And it also has to involve willingness to invest in changing these behaviors. So that's what I would plug.
Thank you.
Thank you.